You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Paul Eales.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Erik van Rooyen wins his maiden European Tour title at the Scandinavian Invitation.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I'm 17 even, I got a little emotional and, you know, the tournament was far from done. So that part on 18, you know, hands are shaking, knowing that, you know, I've got to make it to win. And it goes in, I mean, yeah, you can't really describe it. I'm over the moon.
We'll hear from the South African on his success, plus both Matt Fitzpatrick and Henrik Stenson. And then we've a preview of the next event on the Race to Dubai, the Omega European Masters in Switzerland. And a very good day to one and all. It is a bank holiday in the UK, so I'm absolutely pleased to say that both Paul Eales and Kit Alexander have decided to come into our box of a studio, even though this is probably one of the best bank holidays in terms of weather that I think we've had for quite some time. So, Paul, many thanks for coming in and giving up your bank holiday today. You weren't doing anything, weren't planning on going anywhere, the beach, no, the golf course, the garden.
It's too hot, isn't it?
So you're quite happy to be inside?
Typical for the English. You could pay a lot of money this afternoon to be in here, which is nice and cool. Because we'll all be melting come 12 o'clock, won't we, this afternoon?
Kit, as well, thank you very much for coming. You weren't up to anything today, were you?
It's time and a half for working on a bank holiday, isn't
it? They tell me. Yeah. You know, I try that all the time and a half. It just doesn't work. It's a bygone era, time and a half. We get paid standard rate, but we are fully committed to the cause, as, of course, Erik van Rooyen was yesterday. This seemingly, Paul, was a long time coming for me because he'd been knocking on the door this year, hadn't he?
Yes, he had. I think it was 5 top tens. He was a second. Kit will give us all the finer details on this, but it was a name that was cropping up on leaderboards, even in the majors. I think the US PGA, he went close maybe to a top 10 there if he didn't have a top 10. So it's been an accident waiting to happen, hasn't it?
It has indeed. And when you consider that he had to battle one of the best European Tour players to get the win. This was a proper win, wasn't it, Kit? Because Matt Fitzpatrick, and I feel for Matt, friend of the show, I think he's finished second 3 times this season, once on the PGA Tour, twice in Europe. This was an event that van Rooyen won rather than Fitzpatrick or others gave up.
Oh, 100%. I think somewhat unfairly there had already started to be question marks over van Rooyen's finishing ability, when in actual fact, he'd only had the 54-hole lead a couple of times. One of those in Morocco, he had a pretty poor final round. But aside from that, it's kind of been, when he has been there or thereabouts, he's been taken away from him. And Fitzy very nearly did that with the birdie finish there yesterday. Van Rooyen kind of almost punished for being so good, being so consistent, being there or thereabouts. In golf, you lose more than you win. So he can take so much from the manner of it. Almost, if he'd have made a sort of tap-in birdie putt up 18 because he'd have got it on in two, obviously he'd take the win, that'd be great. But the fact that he stood over a 15-footer, knowing he needs to hole it, it's pretty quick, downhill, swinging a bit, to win it like he did in the manner he did is as important as the fact that he got over the line and got the trophy.
Absolutely right. And you just look at the scores. He's had a 65 in the first round and then gone 64-64 in rounds 3 and 4. So he's definitely won it by playing fantastic golf. He hasn't reversed into a win here. This is just him going out and taking the golf course apart. And, you know, other than Fitzy there, it was a pretty much a two-horse race, wasn't it, all the way through?
He seemed to be always holding Matt Fitzpatrick off, you know, at arm's length for much of the day. It was just right at the end that you thought, crikey, this could happen again here because of the was it a two-shot swing on the 17th when Fitz birdied and Erik unfortunately bogeyed, you think, crikey, this could be the question mark again for the South African.
Yeah, if he hadn't have won, you do then start
then
to
suddenly
think
he comes into
those
that category.
Question marks do start becoming legitimate about his finishing abilities. But yeah, he looked cool and calm all day, hold bombs, hit the ball into the places where you'd want to hit it, took the risk out of play, didn't go near any of the water. The par threes was arguably hitting it too safe on his lines on the par threes. But when you go and roll in 50-foot or 45-foot bombs like he did on 5 and 10, then you can afford to take a safer line. But generally, he just looks the absolute complete package. And I think an outside bet for a President's Cup pick as well, or not even an outside bet anymore.
It's incredible, and you touched on this just a few moments ago, how golfers come into our consciousness and they start to play well and they start to get multiple top 10s, top 5s. They go close and all of a sudden, And this is a guy who's graduated from the Challenge Tour. All of a sudden, it's like, well, this guy can't finish simply because he's playing well. Why do we do that with golfers? I think we do it in sport full stop, don't we? The guy who's played brilliantly all season, just because he hasn't got the win, doesn't make him a bad player. But in certainly my mind, I'm thinking, crikey, surely, Eric, this has got to be your week. Why do we do that?
Yeah, well, it's a great point because we've talked about Rory, haven't we, all year?
Absolutely. I mean, he's only won three times.
The standard of his golf is just exceptional week in, week out, and he doesn't win. And it just goes to show how difficult it is to win whatever tour you're playing on, whether it's the Euro Pro Challenge Tour or the European Tour. It's so, so difficult. And the quality of Eric's golf was outstanding. You look through his stats, every bit of his game. He is a good putter, and he knocked a couple of long ones in there, and he's got arguably the best putter on the European Tour in Matt Fitzpatrick in the game in front, rolling these putts in, making birdies, and he wasn't going away. And, all credit to Eric for keep going. It was fantastic to watch.
I thought we might get a few more in the mix early on. Henrik Stenson was making a move. Obviously, Wade Ormsby was in the final group, didn't manage to kick on. Should it have been a little bit closer for one or two others, do you think? Are we a little bit disappointed with Henrik, maybe? Started pretty well, but didn't really get anything going on the back nine.
I mean, it looked early like Stenson was going to make one of his charges. He had the 62 earlier in the week. He looked like he was on for something like that after the front nine. Obviously, the ace was incredible, the reaction, not knowing it had gone in until he got sort of halfway down, carrying his putter off the tee. It was a wonderful shot. And he played the back nine better all week. Having got to the turn in four under, you thought, oh, he's in this, and it's Stenson, and he's got the crowd with him. And then he just never quite got going on the back nine. The thing that struck me about him was the amount of birdie putts that were coming up just short. Yeah. And you can always tell it. It's something that gets kind of thrown at these less experienced players, that the pace starts to go. They don't get the ball running at the hole for those birdie putts when it really matters. Mm-hmm. Henrik Stenson's a guy you wouldn't expect that to be the case for, but he did on the back nine. There was no conviction in the putting, it looked like to me. I mean, his ball striking, as it always is, was sublime all week. The three wood was on fire. He gave himself the chances. They just never quite looked like going in. But wonderful to have him here. I mean, we were chatting beforehand. The effect of having Henrik Stenson in a Scandinavian invitation, the crowds that brought in. I mean, it was a wonderful tournament all around, and a lot of credit for that has to go to Henrik Stenson choosing to play there rather than the FedEx Cup. He foregoed the opportunity for all of that money to tee up in one of his home events and put in a great performance at the end of the day.
Well, that's the quality of the man, isn't it? A major winner. Let's put it in context. He finished third. He shot 66 in that final round, and he just had a run of pars when everybody was making birdies. And that's how it goes sometimes. And you could even see it with Eric coming down the stretch. He'd hold putts from different postcodes, and suddenly he couldn't get the golf ball to the hole. So it wasn't just Henrik that was struggling to get them in toward the end, but it was great to see him there. And all the other stuff that he had going on that week. Huge credit to himself and the European Tour.
Would it have been any different for Van Rooyen if it had been Stenson pushing rather than Fitzpatrick? The crowd was, I mean, they're great fans anyway in Scandinavia. I think we see them the Made in Denmark as well. And I think they were very respectful when it came to both Van Rooyen and Fitzpatrick and the battle they had down the stretch. Would it have been more partisan? Would it have been different? Well, or does that not happen, Swedish golf?
No, I think it does. But, if Eric had been playing with Henrik, maybe.
And the same with Fitzy. If he'd have been watching Fitzy roll in those putts rather than him being the group ahead, I think that did make a big difference that he wasn't with either of them.
So we are suggesting now that Eric Van Rooyen may well go on to far greater things. This is a first proper season on tour for him this year?
Second
proper season. He went close in the Open Championship. He's played well in a couple of Opens. Is his game suited to Lynx golf? Have you spied that from him, do you think, Paul?
I think his game, like all great players, and I use that term, Eric at the moment, is he a great player? Well, last week he was a great player, but will he go on? If you look at his curve, it's an upward curve, and the momentum that he's got going forward from getting his card on the Challenge Tour in 17, he was the highest rank graduate in 2018 on the European Tour, I think, finishing 35th or something, and with chances to win. And this year he's up to the level again and become a winner. So, who knows where this is going to take him, but the confidence that he's had from his first win, they all say, well, it's easy to win once and it's difficult to win multiple times, but the way he plays and certainly puts, you can see him going on and winning and winning and winning.
Just back on the fans for a second, did you see the Wade Ormsby situation where the fans had to come and help move a rock?
Great effort, yeah. Reminiscent of Tiger at Scottsdale.
Wasn't as big as the Tiger Boulder, was it? I don't think.
Only took three blokes to move the one for Wade. Yeah, I've sat on that boulder that Tiger got moved, actually. I mean, it's big enough that, I mean, I'm not a big guy, but I didn't have to sit down too far to get on it.
Has it been worn down over time? When was that? When was the Tiger? Was it late 90s?
Oh, long time. Early 2000s.
I think early to mid 2000s, but yeah, it might be a bit weather worn, but it's a good sofa sized boulder.
Would you have got away with that with slow play now, do you think? How long did it take to move that boulder years ago?
Tiger can get away with most things.
Yeah, can get away with most.
It's Tiger, yeah.
But the fans were fantastic, weren't they? A lot of young fans as well, I saw, that were watching from the galleries. I mean, every single time we go to Scandinavia, you generally get the major players from that nation playing, which obviously helps. I think they come out in their thousands anyway, but they seem to warm to the event. They're very respectful. They seem to be quite knowledgeable, and you get a massive different demographic of people, it seems, coming to the golf course.
Yeah, and I think when you take golf as a whole in Scandinavia, it is a family activity, and of course it's no surprise. But when I played over there, you always had huge crowds. They've always supported European Tour golf over there, and they've had some great players down the lines, haven't they, from Parnovic going way back when I was playing right up to the current day. So, you know, and they've only got the one tournament as well to go. Well, they've got Denmark as well, but you know, in Sweden, where they've all come out, in Gothenburg there. So it's a great week. It always is. And they are kind of the most knowledgeable fans. We say it, don't we, in the UK, sort of throwaway line, oh, they're brilliant sports fans and they know the golf. Well, the Scandinavians know the golf as well. And what is great to me, again, is that family atmosphere that they create over there.
You're absolutely spot on. That was the thing that came to my mind. It's a family sport. If you look at the participation rates in Scandinavia, there are as many women play as there are men. The juniors, they've got really strong junior programs, great support, good investment from the national bodies. I think from the government as well, actually, over there. It is a proper family sport. Clubs are family environments. British golf clubs and British golf as a whole could learn a hell of a lot from how things are being done in Scandinavia at the moment.
Yeah, and the top players have always been approachable with the youngsters over there. They've always put back in from Parnovic. You know, we had Ove Selberg, Magnus Persson going back all those years. They've always been available to the youngsters because they've appreciated the support that they had when they came through.
And they help run tournaments as well. Robert Carlson's had a Challenge Tour event. They've always put that platform there for guys to follow in their footsteps. I mean, people forget, I think Parnovic was the first European, really, to go and play sort of full-time in the States on the PGA Tour. He was the trendsetter.
Yep, yep.
And yet he still took time to go back and to give the opportunities for people to follow in those footsteps.
And why wouldn't you want to go back to Sweden?
Absolutely.
What a wonderful place.
Well, one man who certainly enjoyed it was, of course, Erik van Rooyen, who tweeted, "Wow, words can't describe this moment for me. Thanks to everyone. I want to thank my wife for sticking by me through thick and thin, my caddy for guiding me through this journey, my family, my friends, my team, and all my sponsors." Has to get that in. "This is only the beginning." Matt Fitzpatrick tweeted, "Not to be today. Gave it my all and wouldn't take one shot back. Congrats to @FredVR, which is Eric's Twitter handle. More on that shortly. On the win. Impressive final round. Thanks to everyone at the Scandinavia Invitation for a great week. Thomas Bjorn says, "So many thoughts on the event, but let's start in the right place. And @FredVR, can't believe this is his first win. Seems like he is up there most weeks he plays. So well deserved. And I'm sure many wins will follow. Class player and a class person." And finally, Luke Donald says, "Congrats, Eric. Seems like it was only a matter of time. First of many, I'm sure." Well, we can hear from Erik van Rooyen now speaking after his win at the Scandinavian Invitation.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I got, on 17 even, I got a little emotional, and, you know, the tournament was far from done. So, over the moon. I mean, that putt on 18, you know, hands are shaking, knowing that, you know, I've got to make it to win. And you hit it and you're like, okay, stay up. And it goes in. I mean, yeah, you can't really describe it. I'm over the moon.
Talk about 17. It's your first drop shot of the day. Yeah. Were the nerves kicking in a bit then?
No, not really. Or I should say, not more than any other time during the day. I was slightly nervous throughout the whole day. It was a good putt. I just didn't hit it quite hard enough. I should have hit it in the back of the cup, and I didn't. So, but that's okay. You know, Alex and I, we were going to judge ourselves based on how well we committed on every shot, and I did that. So I'm okay with it.
Made some quite crucial par saves. How important was that for you to keep your momentum going?
Very important. Not even just the par saves. I made some really nice birdie putts as well. I've been putting well all day. So, you know, with this chip shot on 18, it was a really tricky chip going up and over that hill. And the last thing you want to do is leave it short. So I was always going to be slightly more on the aggressive side, trying to sort of hold it and hit the flag rather than leave it short. So knowing that, you know, I can always go make a 10 or a 12 foot putt. And I did that. So I'm really stoked.
Finally, how are you going to celebrate?
Probably a few beers and a few shots of tequila. I think it's on the menu.
That sounds good to me. Really well done.
Thank you. Cheers.
Yeah, why not? Tequila to celebrate.
Yeah, fair play.
You know, I mean, absolutely. A few shots.
I think it's such a transient world, golf, isn't it? We're on to the next week already that sometimes it does pay to just take your time to enjoy it when it is such
absolutely.
A big moment. Shane Lowry did it after the Open. Why not enjoy
feels
it?
A bit old school, that, Paul. A few shots and a few beers, sort of thing that you might have done a few years ago. You know?
Something like that, yeah. Because you try so hard and there are so many weeks where you come away feeling a little bit down, when you do have that week that you've dreamt about and you've prepared and you've worked hard for, then why not celebrate? And if he's a little bit hungover the rest of this week, so be it.
Want to strike through maybe in Switzerland when we get to the preview. He sounded surprisingly honest to me in that interview, admitted he was a bit nervous, admitted that he gets a bit emotional. Whenever we speak to golfers on the show, you sense that they want to stay in the zone and they're taught to stay in the zone and they don't like to sort of give up any real emotion. I thought that was quite interesting from Eric, that interview.
Yeah, I think the Afrikaans way is to be upfront and honest, and you know they're not bothered about showing their emotions because it's a full gambit with those guys. And I think the journey that Eric's been on with close friends around him, and that was the true guy that you heard there. Yes, I mean, he could have made up some stories, but why? That's not him. He was honest about it, and it's great to hear.
I think we're into an age now where golfers are actually being more candid and more honest. We've seen it, you know, Brooks has reinvented himself and says what he thinks. Shane Lowry admitting that he was getting ahead of himself during the final round at the Open, imagining himself holding the claret jug. When that goes totally against, like you say, the stay in the moment, focus on the next shot, but golfers are humans.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that they're willing to put themselves out there as humans and be honest. And we're seeing that and seeing the characters.
Even Rory, of course, got quite emotional, didn't he, at the Open Championship? Even the nerves came through to him. And, you know, post-round interviews that he's performed after those times in Northern Ireland, you sense that, you know, suddenly there is a little bit more to the plan. I mean, Rory's a great interviewee anyway, isn't he? But there is plenty behind the sort of blocks that a lot of golfers put up.
Yeah, and I think part of the European Tour as well is they want to bring out the personalities in the players and give them a stage in which they can be themselves. And I think it's great that the guys are embracing this and they are being honest about what's happening. I mean, I don't know whether you saw the interview with James Morrison talking about the tough times mentally that he'd had and the support from the family outside golf to keep him going, because it's easy for the guys on the way down. We don't talk about them much, do we? That it's always the lads that are winning, but the lads that are suffering most of the weeks, which is the majority of the field.
You cover the Europro Tour, obviously, extensively. Do you see it a little bit more at that level, or do you still see golfers try to perform as if they were, you know, in the top 10 in the world?
I mean, they take a very professional approach to it. They will prepare as well as guys on the European Tour, on the PGA Tour. But what I love about the Euro Pro Tour is the proximity I have to the players and fans can have to the players. You can chat to them, you can see them before the round, you can follow them. And it's seeing the characters and the personalities. There are so many great stories. I mean, a lad called Sean Towndrow, he was diagnosed with cancer 2 or 3 years ago. He's come back and he's won on the tour this year. Ashton Turner, who qualified for the Open, only took up golf because he had a rare form of cerebral palsy when he was a kid. And he played golf to help him with balance and coordination. And he's now a pro. He's played in the last two Opens. I think Paul is absolutely right that the European Tour, and they do a good job of it, we try and do it on the Europro, to give them a stage to tell their stories and to show their characters. Because going right the way down through the levels, there are so many interesting stories. And these guys are just human beings that love golf and are trying to make their way in this game. A game that, as Paul rightly says, will beat you up probably a lot more often than you will get joy from it. And seeing people go on that journey and being a part of it and experiencing it with them, I think is a really special part of golf and something that we can bring out through our coverage of it.
Well, Eric Van Rooyen certainly enjoyed the week, and his success has moved him inside the top 10 on the Race to Dubai rankings presented by Rolex, up to 61st in the official world golf rankings from 87th. And his success was the 150th victory in European Tour history by a South African. They're not bad, Paul, South African golfers, are they? They've produced one or two over the years.
Yeah, they are a great bunch. And, of course, credit again going down there to the Sunshine Tour. It's a great training ground for these guys to go and play, to cut the teeth before they go out into the big wide world. And we're just absolutely made up that all these South Africans, you know, come and play and show us their skills on the European Tour.
It is a well-worn route. What's not particularly well-worn or even well-known, Kit, as we were trying to find something out, the Twitter handle of Erik van Rooyen, at FredVR.
Yeah, he is a Frederick.
You've worked out.
Well, I Google searched it. I can't claim too much credit. No, he's a Frederick, and that obviously gets shortened to Erik. So all of his family call him Erik. And then when he went to college, because obviously Frederick was on everything, he gets called Freddie by all of his college mates. I mean, it's a bit of a strange one, Frederick to Erik, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a shortening of Frederick.
I mean, you'd go Fred, but Freddie, he's gone for the back end, hasn't he?
Paul, you're having that as a shortening of Frederick?
Why not?
Yeah, well, why not? There's an underscore at the end of his Twitter handle, incidentally, if you want to follow at FredVR underscore. You can do. Always worth a follow of all of the top golfers across the continent. And there's no doubt that Matt Fitzpatrick is one of the top golfers on the European Tour scene. And we can hear what the runner-up made of his final round in Sweden.
You know, I hate to say it, but I had no luck out there. I've flagged one down 14 and hit the pin and ricochet off the green. Got a mud ball on 16 and it's just flown the green, you know, two things that is part of golf, but, you know, really comfortable with where my game's at, and another second place, so hopefully one better later this year. Well played, Erik. You know, it's a great final round to go out with the lead and shoot that and win by one.
I think I may well have said earlier that Matt's finished second on the European Tour this season, actually three times, isn't it, and once on the PGA Tour. He was second in Hong Kong, which I completely forgot about. Sorry about that, Matt. Also second in the BMW International Open, which I must admit, I thought he was going to win that up against Andrea Pavan. Second at the weekend just gone. Also second at Bay Hill in the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Boy, has he been knocking on the door, Paul, this season.
Yeah, and Matt was a great character when I was working with the England Golf, and he was one of the juniors, 16 years of age, playing in that team. And you always thought Matt, in his own mind, had it all mapped out where he was going. He had a great team around him, Pete Cowan, etc. And this journey that he's been on, and he's a winner. He's always been a winner. He won the Boys' Championship, he won the US Amateur Championship, and he's gone on and on. And he'll be hurting there that he hasn't won this year, because he expects that he's going to win himself. And of course, having now employed Billy Foster on his bag as caddy, I mean, that'll really give him a kick up the backside, because Billy knows what it takes to win, and he'll be telling Matt, listen, that's not good enough, or you need to do this, or you need to do that, or well done, next week's the one.
Yeah, Fitzy's already alluded to that Billy will tell him what he thinks in uncertain terms. We kind of saw that in the little exchange when they were over by the rabbit scraping, or the hole, and they were caught delaying, waiting for a second opinion, and Billy went, just play it, mate. You know, people at home are going to think you're trying to cheat, get an advantage, just play it. Mm. And then Fitzy went, you know what, you're probably right. And he did, and he made his par, and on they went. I love it. He's one of my favourite players on tour, because he is, in inverted commas, normal in the nicest possible way, on and off the course. He's normal in terms of how he goes about his business. I played with him at Hallamshire for a feature for Golf World last year, and he rocked up in his dad's BMW. He was staying with his parents because he was home. He just lives his normal life, you know, he watches Sheffield United and does his own thing. And on the course, I mean, he's an unbelievable putter. But in terms of his ball striking, he's sneaky longer than people think he is. It's because
is that the slight negative with his game, that he's not the longest?
Well, no.
He's not that short. That's the thing. Yeah, he's just low.
You can compete round Bay Hill, which is a big, big golf course, and you can hit it far enough. And he does. Yeah. He does. And he's also being pushed by his younger brother, Alex. Mm-hmm. He's coming through the ranks, so watch out for that name.
Walker Cup this year, Alex. Yeah. Yeah. The thing that I like about Fitzy is he's got those intangibles. Today's day and age, we look for answers, we look for stats, they're thrown at us everywhere, especially with the American influence. But there are some things you just can't measure, like heart and grit and determination and willpower and that ability to perform under pressure and get over the line. And he has that in absolute spades. He's a golfer that it's hard to measure, but you sure as hell wouldn't want to be up against him in a match play match or going down the final nine of a golf tournament. And therefore, it's more credit to Erik van Rooyen that he held off a charging Fitzy.
Well, he's had a shocker this week because he's come second and the Blades have been beaten as well in the Premier League. So it's not been a great weekend for Mr. Fitzpatrick. Only joking, Matt. Henrik Stenson, of course, finished tied third, closing with a 66. That included a hole-in-one at the sixth. Did the Swedes have a particular target score in mind as he tried to win in front of his home fans?
I didn't really have a number. Making lots of birdies was the plan, and that didn't really happen, even though we had some couple of good holes, one in particular. But all in all, I didn't have my sharpest game, and especially here on the back nine, I couldn't really hit anything close. And, you know, I had some good tries from mid to long range with the putter, but they all kind of shaved the edges. And, it wasn't meant to be today.
Well, we talked about Henrik previously. On his hole in one, he said he didn't see it go in. First hole-in-one in his 357th European Tour appearance. He's got to get the hurry-up on, hasn't he? Shocking numbers.
Yeah, terrible stats, that. Well, it's funny, for an absolute ball striker like Henrik, you think the amount of time he peppers the flag, you'd think he'd have more.
Has he got one on the PGA Tour? We don't know, do we? I don't know.
Not that I can recall, I mean, yeah, great. I mean, but if you could pick anywhere to do it,
oh yeah,
home event just outside about Gothenburg, where he's from, it's a nice place. Worth
did
the wait.
Seve? It keeps coming to my head. I don't think Seve ever had a hole in one, did he?
On tour? I don't know. Yeah, maybe not.
So not easy.
We'll have to dig into the stats books.
And yet there's some 14 handicapper somewhere that's had 10 of them.
Well, James Kingston one always makes me laugh because it was at Houghton in the Dunhill, I think, many years ago down in Johannesburg. He hooked it left going towards the practice ground
and
the out of bounds.
I've seen this.
Clattered into the eucalyptus trees, back onto the green. Rolled like a beautiful putt in, and he won an Audi TT for it.
Absolutely fantastic. That's the way to do it, you see.
It Richard Green who had one a couple of years ago in Australia where he ran it through a bunker?
Sensational.
Hopped up out of the bunker and then just rolled in dead weight.
You can't teach that.
You can't teach that. Teach that.
My dad's had one. Yeah. He's a 23 handicap left-hander. I've never had one. My dad had one by semi-thinning it halfway on a sort of 150-yard par three and it running all the way up, clattering the flag at 100 miles an hour and dropping in.
Paul, how many?
Seven.
Then we knew that was coming.
Yeah, but I've always been lucky.
Absolutely. I bet they went in dead weight, dead middle.
Well, one bouncing in.
Yeah, I had one at the second at Wentworth during the PGA, which was the wrong hole. 14, I'd have won a car. And also in the German Open, I had one on the front side. If I'd have done it on the back side, I'd have been a Mercedes owner. But
you've just got to pick your timing.
Come on, what's wrong with you?
Well, they were probably difficult par threes where you got the car.
Well done to Henrik for his first hole-in-one on the European Tour. We need the top 10 from the Scandinavian Invitation. Let's get the details from Paul.
Yeah, the top 10. There was a few tied in 10th place. Matthew Southgate, Victor Perez, Matthew Pavon, Joachim Lagergren, Andrew Beef Johnston and Sam Horsfield. In 5th place, we had a few of those. Sebastian Soderberg, Wade Ormsby, Alex Levy, Siwan Kim, as well as Jamie Donaldson. 3rd tied was Henrik Stenson and Dean Burmeister. Matthew Fitzpatrick was 2nd, and our winner of the Scandinavian Invitation was Erik van Rooyen.
Any thoughts on other players in the top 10, or indeed outside of the top 10, concerning their performance in Sweden, chaps? I mean,
yeah. For me, the standout was Dean Burmeister. Yeah. He struggled all year. He shot 62, 66 on the weekend to jump up to 3rd place for the week, and that moves him to 101 on the Race to Dubai ranking. So from struggling, he's now got himself in a position where playing privileges are going to be before him next year.
Nice to see Beef come back into a bit of form as well. Like James Morrison this week, a few weeks ago, he came out and was very candid about the troubles and battles he's had off the course mentally. That's 2 top 10s in his last 3 starts now. So a popular guy. Wonderful to see him back playing well again.
Also, Alex Levy, great.
I was going to mention Alex Levy because I'd put him in the same sort of category as maybe Thomas Peters and Bernd Wiesberger, who have both had comeback wins this year. Because at one stage, you thought this guy could be a significant French player, maybe make that Ryder Cup squad from the last Ryder Cup we had, of course, in Europe. But he's not kicked on as much as I thought he would do.
A lot of swing changes. So he went to Sean Foley at the back end of last year, and I think we're just starting to see the fruits of that. I think they mentioned how many cuts he'd missed on the European Tour this season, and it was like a crazy amount. I think he's missed like 11 or 13 cuts. which is staggering for a player of his quality. But yeah, it looks like he's back swinging the club well again under Sean Foley's tutelage.
Five-time winner on the European Tour, just looking at his stats there. He won last year and the year before that and the year before that. So maybe not as out of form as I thought they might be. But interesting to see him back amongst the top 10 and on the leaderboard. Predictions from last week. A reminder of the format. Everyone gets two picks. One must be outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race to Dubai standings. 20 points for a win, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a miscut. Richard Kaufman, who stood in this particular chair for the presenters, went for Henrik Stenson, who was tied third. 10 points, well done, Richard. And also Minwoo Lee. So he gets 10 points for that. John Hawksworth went for Matt Fitzpatrick. Well done to John. Second, 10 points. And also Andrew Johnston, who was tied 10th, 5 points. That's a very good effort for Hawksworth. 15 points. And Michael McEwen, who was our guest, went for Alex Norren, who was tied 40th. And Paul Waring, who was tied 20th. So he just sneaks 5 points with that top 20 from the Merseysider. Overall, then, presenters on 180, co-presenters 100. The guests have done a little bit better recently with 80. Kit, no pressure on you to try and haul them a little bit closer to everybody else. But I think the presenters,
thrive under that
the presenters
pressure.
Are going to win this game, I think. I don't think there's any real doubt about that. Mainly thanks to me. Rob's usually pretty useless. Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. You can still get involved. Head to the My European Tour section of europeantour.com if you want to. Lee Findlay still leads the global leaderboard. Race to Dubai standings. Let's get the top 10 from Paul.
And in 10th place is Anders Schauffele, Erik van Rooyen up to 9th. In 8th is Louis Oosthuizen. 7th, Kevin Kisner. 6th is Matthew Fitzpatrick. 5th is Matt Wallace. 4th, Tommy Fleetwood. 3rd is John Rahm. 2nd is Bernd Wiesberger. And at the top of the pile, Shane Lowry.
Other news, PGA Tour, Rory McIlroy has been crowned FedEx Cup champion for the second time at the Tour Championship. A final round 66 and the Northern Irishman, a four-shot victory over Xander Schauffele in Atlanta at Eastlake. Justin Thomas and world number one Brooks Koepka were a shot further back in tied third spot. McIlroy had to complete 31 holes on the final day at Eastlake due to Saturday's disruption because of lightning strikes. A little bit of a late stutter from Rory. A couple of birdies, then a couple of bogeys. Gave a few shots back on 14 and 15. Schauffele reduced the lead of the Northern Irishman to 2, but an excellent par save on 16 settled the nerves. And then a fifth birdie of the final round at the penultimate hole effectively sealed the deal. Chaps, Rory McIlroy, FedEx Cup champion for the second time. Paul, your thoughts first of all. I mean, we alluded to it briefly earlier on in the show. We always think that Rory should be winning everything and that maybe he's not performing particularly well and there are problems here and there. He's just got $15 million. Yeah. He's won 3 times. He's won the Players. It's been an extraordinary season for him, hasn't it, in many ways?
It really has. And for all of us that do follow Rory, I mean, he is so, so good that, you know, I'm disappointed when he doesn't do well. And then you could see that emotion at the Open, the pressure that he was under at Portrush, and it didn't happen that first day. And he missed a tiny little putt on 16 or 17, ends up coming back and just missing the cut by a shot. And that would have hurt him. And then, of course, all the other opportunities. And he sees guys winning around him. And he's obviously feeling, well, I'm not winning. But he still works hard. He works through it. He probably hasn't putted as well as some of the other guys. And at the end of the day, that's the difference. But just absolutely delighted that Rory's gone and knocked off the big one. And there is nobody in the game that's surprised.
Well, the 15 million will be handy. The most significant thing Rory will take from that is beating Brooks Koepka in a head-to-head. And what he could see,
because he got done at the, where
got
was
done
it?
At
the Wyndham?
The FedEx.
FedEx? I can't remember which
Memphis,
one it was. Was it
FedEx,
Memphis?
St.
Yeah.
Jude.
Yeah.
You know, Brooks has been there in all the majors this year, the big events. I think he needed to get one over on him. And he did, and in emphatic style. And I think as well as just beating him, it will be the effect he saw when Rory started making birdies. Brooks wasn't just making pars. He missed some shortish putts. There's a crack in the armour now, I think, for Rory, psychologically, against Brooks, whereas before you felt like Koepka might slightly have the upper hand psychologically, but Rory can take so much from that win. I mean, he was fantastic. His driving, I mean, it's normally sublime, but it was absolutely off the charts this week at Eastlake. It was unbelievable. He has had a great year. 73% of his PGA Tour starts this season were top 10s.
It's incredible,
plus
isn't
the wins,
it?
Of course, Canada, the Players, and this week. Interesting debate now on who would be Player of the Year out of Brooks and Rory, really. I mean, I would just be on Brooks' side
because
for
of the
majors. But purely statistically and wins, and then obviously we know what weight the PGA Tour like to put on the Players' Championship and the FedEx.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top of that. But a massively significant win for Rory.
Yeah, I think you can only have one winner each week, can't you? And Brooks just had a bad day. Go through his stats, just nothing was quite there for him. He was trying, he was up there, and it just wasn't happening, where Rory got that momentum and he kept going. And that was a role reversal from earlier on in the year. So it was just Rory's turn, wasn't it?
How significant has the changes in his wedge play been for you?
I think Rory's a bright young man and he's looking at all aspects. He's not frightened to ask for advice, which he's done. Brad Faxon, I think, is currently helping him with his putting, and that looks like it's a little more aggressive and positive, and obviously they went in this last week. So every department of it, you can't stand still. There's too many good players there, and if you stand still, you just get spike marks all the way down your back. You know, Rory is trying hard to raise the barrier, as they all are.
You mentioned that, Kit, maybe because that's what Dustin Johnson did. Suddenly he became very, very good with the wedges and suddenly was winning every week almost.
I think if you're hitting the ball
that far,
between 320 and 360 off the tee, you're going to then be hitting a lot of wedges.
And was that the weakness, do you think, in Rory's game at that stage?
Yeah, I think, yeah, and perhaps that, you know, enough putts weren't dropping, but then you could argue that's just because he wasn't hitting the wedges close enough. Suddenly you bring your dispersion in with the wedges and you're looking at 10-footers for birdie rather than 20-footers.
Yeah, Rory would have had people combing through all his statistics to know the edge that he needs within his own game to get to where he needs to, which is what DJ did in his wedge play. So these guys aren't top of the world just by sitting on the backsides and doing nothing. They're looking at everything that is out there to make them better.
The interesting thing with the DJ and the Rory comparison in terms of how they've improved their wedge play is it's almost the opposite. DJ got more detailed in it. He stood on a launch monitor. He worked out his exact numbers, his spin rates for everything. He really analysed it. Rory admitted this week he used to have 3 backswings with the wedges. He's taken that down to 2. Rory seems to be trying to simplify it to kind of let the natural feel and the natural talent take over. And I think that's what he needs, because he is arguably the most naturally talented golfer on the planet at this time.
He ranks first in so many statistical categories, doesn't he, on the PGA Tour? I don't know the exact numbers here, but there was a tweet put out not so long ago, and he's having his best season ever in terms of how he's playing the game.
Yeah.
But as we've mentioned a few times, it's still like, oh, well, what's wrong with Rory?
It's hard to win.
It's
hard to win,
isn't it?
Dan. Yeah, and there's so many good players all trying to do it. But what Rory will be doing, I would think, at the end of the year is benchmarking what he's done this year and finding out where he can improve on those. So there's even improvement there, even though he's leading the statistics in virtually every category.
Let's hope he doesn't go the way of DJ. What's happened with DJ incidentally? Not that I'm too concerned, but
I think,
is it just temporary?
This week specifically, I think there was just a certain amount of disinterest. He was too far back to really mount a challenge, but he's been kind of scrappy a bit all year.
We'll talk about the handicap system in just a second. Worth pointing out that, of course, Brooks Koepka did go into the final round a shot clear of the chasing pack, but we can hear from the winner next, Rory, who was understandably delighted with the victory, but also happy to put right what he thought went wrong at the same event last year.
It was pretty cool. You know, I turned to Harry when we were walking down the hill on 18 after I'd hit my second shot, and I said, well, this walk's a little more pleasant than last year. Not running away from a stampede, but it was cool, you know, to have a moment like that again. You know, I didn't play well at all last year with Tiger in that final group, so to get myself in a final group again this year. And, you know, I thought a lot about that. You know, I thought about the final group with Tiger last year, the final group with Brooks in Memphis a few weeks ago, and just, you know, I really wanted to go out there and play well and really take it to him. And I did that for the most part. You know, I went out, you know, shot 66 on a really tough golf course and got the job done. So, you know, really cool to put my name on this trophy for a second time. Anytime you can do something that only Tiger has done, you're doing something right. So it was an awesome day, long day, you know, to come back out in the morning and play 13 holes and then play that full 18. It was, I'm going to sleep well tonight, put it that way.
didn't like the walk last year, but did 12 months on. Great to see that swarm of fans, isn't it? It's something that we see at the Open, and when you look back at Open Championships and other events over the years, Paul, fantastic to see thousands just pile onto the fairway behind the final group.
Yes, it is. And, you know, Rory speaks so well, doesn't he? We talk about how good his golf game is, but, you know, as a person, what he's trying to do, not just for his own career, but for the game of golf as well, getting involved in lots of initiatives, as well as keeping his eye on the top end of his game and his career. So, you know, it was wonderful for Rory to get some reward at the end of a season that one or two had been question marks by him, but, you know, just brilliant stuff from Rory all the way through.
PGA Tour officials, cover your ears now. Did we like the format here, the handicap situation? Paul.
Well,
Justin Thomas starts at 10 under. Patrick Cantlay, 8 under. Brooks Koepka, 7 under. All the way down to the likes of Louis Oosthuizen, Bryson DeChambeau, Charles Howell III, Lucas Glover, and Jason Kokrak, who started 10 shots off the pace because of what they'd done in the other playoff events.
I sent a tweet out at the start of the week, tongue in cheek, saying that Tommy Fleetwood's that good that he's got to give Justin Thomas 9 shots this week. Somebody on the range asked me, you know, what did I think about it? And to be honest, I didn't really understand what was going on there. So I was a bit, you know, let's just go and watch what happened in the golf tournament. But I was a little bit bemused about what was going on. But having said that, I didn't study what they were trying to do. So I'm sure Jay Monahan, if he was on, would be able to tell us exactly the thinking behind it.
I mean, I can understand why they wanted to try and make this a finale. They didn't want a situation where one player wins the event and another player finishes, you know, 14th and cops the 10 million, which has happened in the past. And last year was slightly different, I guess, because, I mean, Tiger won the event. Justin Rose was celebrating. No one else was really cheering when he copped 10 million. It's a weird situation. I can understand why they want to try and change it. Have they got it right here? Did they look out? Because we've got McIlroy and Koepka going head-to-head and Thomas and Shoffley and some great players right up in the vanguard here. Kit, what were your thoughts?
What I would say, actually, it produced a good finale. And as a way to finish the FedEx Cup, I think it works. But it's the FedEx Cup finale. It's not the Tour Championship. The fact that the person that wins it with the handicap included is the guy that gets the official win, not the guy that shoots the least strokes.
Although Rory this time, wasn't it?
But that's pure fluke, you know. Someone else could have shot. Xander Schauffele, who actually finished second in strokes and the whole thing, could have shot the lowest score, not won the FedEx Cup, got the world ranking points, not got an official win. I actually think it worked out better than I anticipated.
Yeah, maybe it'll be tweaked in time. I mean, we always applauded the European Tour for doing something different. This is obviously something different with an awful lot of money attached to it as well, which might make it sit slightly different in people's minds. But I applaud them for doing something different. It did work out to be a great event. We'll see in the future how it progresses. Top 10 in the world. Let's get the standings when it comes to those global rankings, Paul.
Yeah, in 10th place is Bryson DeChambeau. 9th is Xander Schauffele. 8th, Tiger Woods. 7th, Patrick Cantlay. 6th, John Rahm. 5th is Justin Thomas. 4th, Justin Rose. 3rd, Dustin Johnson. 2nd is Rory McIlroy. And number 1 in the world is Brooks Koepka.
Elsewhere, Darius Vandril shot the lowest final 36 holes of the 2019 European Challenge Tour season to win the Rolex Trophy at Golf Club de Geneva.
63-64 last two rounds.
Excellent.
Brilliant stuff.
That'll work
indeed. Dutchman was 7 strokes off the lead at the halfway stage, came from 4 shots behind on the final day. It's his second Challenge Tour title in 12 months. Is he a player that we should be looking out for? Probably, obviously.
It's another one that had been coming. I think he finished second on the European Tour a little earlier in the season at the Belgian knockout. He's shot some incredibly low single rounds this season. He's had a lot in the low and mid-60s. It's been, the key for him has been putting 4 together. And I think now he's done it, you know, he'll be a good addition to the European Tour, I think, next year when he inevitably is there.
And finally, friend of the show, Carly Booth, ended a 7-year wait for her 3rd Ladies European Tour title with a 1-shot victory in the Czech Open. So congratulations to both of those golfers. Slow play. is the headline it says on my script here. I think I've done this about eight times this season, only joking. But there was an announcement, Paul, on the European Tour just this past week. From the start of the 2020 season, and this was approved in July, it's been fine-tuned since, so it was a little late coming out, but it does focus on next year. And the plan focuses on four key areas: regulation, education, innovation, and field sizes. Lots of different points here. I know that you've taken a look at this, Paul. What are your thoughts generally on slug play? And do you think the points that the European Tour have raised here will, I don't want to say help eradicate it, but at least we don't have as many incidents of it?
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to get rid of it totally, are we?
No. But I think if you put it in context, this is something that's been going on for a number of years. The data's been there for the referees, John Paramore and Andy McPhee, to just have a look at and bring it to the tournament committee. And it's the tournament committee that have decided, listen, let's do something about this. So over a period of time, they've looked at it. And it's not just because Bryson DeChambeau was in the media headlines for his 2 minutes, 20 seconds debacle on a green. They've tried, but in the rules of golf, and this is what I look at, and I think it's rule 5.6A, if you want to have a look at that, and it's unreasonable delay of play. And it clearly states that for one breach of this, it's a shot penalty. Second breach is two, which is the maximum. Third, you're out of here.
You're out.
You're gone.
Chewed.
Absolutely. And so what the European Tour have said is, well, for the second breach of the timing, we're going to give you a shot. And then the fines start to go up for guys that are being monitored more than others. So they're trying to give the players some chance to sort their own house out, which I quite like, but I would be more draconian. I'd just give them the hook.
I like the education element to it. I think that's a nice idea. You know, the technology you've got in here, it says that there will be a way to pace every group. Now, we use something very similar, and maybe even the same thing on the Euro Tour, called Tag Marshal. So every group gets given a little tracker. So even if you're in position on the course, you know exactly how long you're taking to play. So the moment anyone gets out of position, it flashes up on the radar, on the referee's thing. Also, if there's a ruling required, you press a button on it. So that means that referees are alerted quicker, they get there quicker. And it has brought pace of play, made rounds quicker on the Euro Pro Tour this season. So that is another thing that is going to help.
What we're talking about is habits of players that come onto tour, whether it's from junior golf, international amateur golf, mini tour golf, that have got all the time in the world. They haven't got the referees that are pushing them round, and suddenly they come to the big stage and they're still in that, I'm going to take as long as I need to take to hit the great shot, which you can understand. But when we look at the innovation that the European Tour had at the Shot Clock Masters in Austria, times were down in under 4 hours. The stroke average went down considerably.
Yeah, scores were better.
Scores were better across the field. So guys are playing better by playing quicker. So what do you not need to know more than that to actually get out there and do it?
It's a four-point plan, and I think if it's implemented, I think we will see some progress.
Well, it will be implemented. There's no question about it.
This is the situation. Yeah. And as soon as it is, you can imagine that players will quicken a pace, and it might not take that long for all those round times to come down and for certain players, you know, to make sure they were within the boundaries of what's set out for them to play.
Yeah, and it's going to be tougher for the new members of the tour coming in next year that possibly haven't had pace of play before and have been able to do what they've wanted to do. But it's not just the new players that the problem. We know that some of the long-standing, bigger celebrity-type players have had issues, and that goes way, way back, doesn't it? So
how quick are you, Paul, speaking of big celebrity
unbelievably
players?
Unbelievably quick. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't get any easier, does it? The longer you stand there looking at it, you think, I've just got to hit this. Get on with it. And I'm hitting it more times than many of the others. So.
More practice.
More practice.
Let's move on. Next on the European Tour is the Omega European Masters. Matt Fitzpatrick, who we've talked about in depth already on the show, given the fact he was second in Sweden last week. He is the defending champion. It's the last event that he won. It seems to be a course that sets up brilliantly for him. It's a wonderful course to look at on television. I've never been, Paul. You have.
Oh,
it looks sensational.
It is absolutely stunning. I've not been for a few years. They've made some more changes to it. They've dropped one of the greens. I think it's about number 12 or 13, and they've created an amphitheatre for the spectators around there. It really is a stunning place to play golf. The one thing that the newcomers will have to get used to is the altitude change, because the ball definitely goes further. We used to take working in yards and meters book and just use that. So that was kind of 10% was the difference. And the scoring's usually pretty low. Hopefully, you know, they're going to get some good weather, but that cloud can come down and it can get pretty chilly out there.
You were out there last week, weren't you, Kit?
I was in Switzerland, yeah, playing in Andermatt, so a more German bit than around Kranz. But, yeah, stunning. I mean, to be surrounded by mountains and playing golf at elevation, as Paul says it, the ball does go a bit further. I felt like a proper man hitting the ball out there, so that was fantastic. But, yeah, it's a wonderful venue. I have to say, of all of the places the European Tour goes, there are two that stand out for me that I've not been to and I would sell my granny to go to, and that is Kranz and Leopard Creek in South Africa. I just think as venues and as what you get around the golf course and the golf course itself, it is just stunning.
Favourite golf courses on the European Tour, Paul Eales?
Oh, I mean, the one that stands to mind that I played regularly was Valderrama.
Yeah.
Because I always played nicely around there. It wasn't a power hitter's course and you had to sort of work your way around the cork trees. That would probably be the first one that's come to mind for Valderrama.
The players obviously like it because there is a stellar cast and we usually get some superstars, don't we? Tommy Fleetwood, Rory McIlroy is playing fresh from his success in America. Sergio Garcia has got a property there playing also. Alex Noren, who's been playing on the PGA Tour over the course of the last year more often than not, and some stellar names that we see week in, week out playing in Europe. Let's just talk about one or two of them before we get some selections from you both. Tommy Fleetwood's season for you, Paul. You're a Tommy advocate, as we all are, and you may well be tipping him up this week. I don't know yet, so don't reveal it just yet. What sort of chances has Tommy got this week?
Tommy's got a great chance. The difficulty being is hopping across the Atlantic. You know, he played last week, he finished...
He's not turning right with the rest of us on a plane, though, is he?
No, and he's probably not commercial either, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's still taking
Maybe
time out.
Right.
And then, the body clock, etc., all that sort of stuff. And then, of course, playing at altitude, you do feel very, very tired of playing at Kranz Montana just because of the height there. So how can you say Tommy's got no chance this week? The odds probably aren't fully with him because of the journey that he's had. But, you know, him and Ian Finnis, just a great team together. His attitude to life and golf is fantastic, Tommy. So, you know, I'm going to be looking forward to watching him this week.
A couple of missed cuts at the venue. Was fifth back in 2014, Tommy Fleetwood at Kranz. Rory McIlroy, I mean, obviously it's fantastic that he's playing. He could easily win. He usually goes close. But I don't think any of us are going to pick him.
I mean, I think...
Maybe we should. I've not decided yet.
He'll finish top 10 just... Well, I say he'll finish top 10. He should finish top 10 just on pure class. But, you know, he's going to have celebrated a little bit after the win. Same issues as Tommy Fleetwood coming across.
Yeah.
He hasn't played there for a while, but the three times he has played at Kranz, he's finished tied third, seventh and second.
That'll
so,
do.
I mean, that was sort of 5-6 years ago. But the guy knows how to get it around there. He is going to be familiar with
he's
it.
He's going to love hitting the driver, isn't he?
Oh, he's going to like 400
yards. 10% further than he already does. I mean, that's...
So it's a funny one where you almost, the fact he's just won, you almost count it against him a little bit in a funny way.
Yeah, because normally...
I think because of the nature of the tournament he's won, and it's a 15 million one and it's in the States. Yeah. Normally he could go back to back, but is he going to be that focused? He's got the family over there as well. It's a nice little holiday. Thing is, even if he's not focused, you'd back him to finish top 10 anyway. So.
And he is an Omega ambassador, as Sergio is, and they put on a great show. It really is a wonderful week for the players to go, and that's one of the reasons why these guys are going.
Sergio's got a property there. He's got great form figures there as well. Third, first, fourth, sixth, 04, 05, 06, and 15. So those form figures are stretched over more than a decade, but he's going to be wanting to win, obviously, Sergio. What do we make of his chances this week? You're pulling a face at me here, Kit.
I just can't see it. He just doesn't strike me as a happy bunny on the golf course at the moment. And Sergio has greater correlation between happiness off the course and form on it than any other golfer I can think of.
But this is a home game for him.
But his expectations rise as well, and that's often not a good thing to do, like Kit was saying, you know. And if he's not happy, and he's irritable, and, you know, he knows the pressure's on him to do there because he's the star of the show almost, isn't he, being the sort of the home bird. But, again, how can you count Sergio Garcia out?
Alex Nolan's won twice at Kranz this year. You've mentioned the course. Is it important to have that course form in the bank if you can play the track? you're going to go well, or there's some players and some types of golfers that are never going to be suited to playing there?
Yeah, no, I think it is, because if you're an aggressive iron player around there and you've got your numbers dialed in, you can give it a whack and it will respond. But whereas some people, because the numbers are so different to what they normally have week in, week out, they almost don't want to hit the shot because what on earth is this going on? But obviously, Alex, being an aggressive player with his irons, suits him. Fitzy's another one as a great iron player. Sergio, a great iron player. You know, they're going to be there and thereabouts. But it'd be interesting, we talked about Rory and his wedge game. Rory's going to hit so many wedges this week. You know, it'll give him some practice at the very least.
Lots of European Tour winners from this campaign. Thomas Peters, who scored just the other week. Andrea Pavan. We've got Bernd Wiesberger teeing up as well. Lee Westwood, not quite sure what Lee's form is around Cron. I suspect it's probably quite good. One in South Africa back end of last year. He seems to be enjoying his golf again.
He's won everywhere, hasn't he?
He has, really.
I'd be surprised if he hasn't won up there. But,
he's had three top 12s in his last six visits.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah, that'll...
He seems to be enjoying... You talk about, you know, Sergio, when he's off the course, he goes well on the course. Lee looks to be enjoying his golf.
Other half on the bag.
Yeah. Lee's always enjoyed life, and more so as he's getting a little bit older now and taking pride in his boy doing nicely at the game, so he seems quite settled.
Matt Wallace, Eddie Pepperell, thoughts on those two players? Have they just fallen off leaderboards and back pages recently? I can't remember them challenging in the last few two or three weeks, although they might not have played an awful lot.
That's kind of the question mark over Wallace a little bit, is how much he's played in the last month or two. But you look at the field and what he's done in that standard of European Tour event, if you like, the sort of middle to high ones, that's where he's kind of made his mark historically over the last two or three years. So
yeah, it's a long year, and the top players historically have not played 20 plus events in a season, and I think Matt Wallace is now looking at it and going, and I saw some of his social media, so he had a wonderful holiday, didn't he, with his girlfriend or partner, wherever it was they were. The pictures look stunning, and so he might come back refreshed, and is a really good run on the European Tour coming up now. Some big
trying
events
to get into the groove again,
and I'm sure Matt has targeted that. Listen, I'm going to have August going to be pretty quiet for me, but bang, watch this autumn for me.
Well, that's the interesting thing about this new schedule and the FedEx Cup moving forward, and Kranz has benefited from that, because normally it would be opposite one of the FedEx Cup playoff events. You probably wouldn't have had Rory and Tommy and arguably Sergio, a few of those bigger names. And the rest of this European Tour season now has benefited. You know, we've got Xander Schauffele coming over and playing Tony Finau.
We've got a bit of a free run, haven't we, in a way?
Until November, it's going to be really strong fields on the European Tour for the most part. A few of the big-name Americans showing up. Most of the big-name Europeans will be playing pretty regularly. That's kind of the unseen or unforeseen, potentially, benefit of a questionable moving forwards of the Tour champs in America, but we get the benefit over here, certainly over the next few weeks.
Eddie Pepperell certainly missed the cut on both of his appearance this week's venue. Let's get some selections then. We've mentioned a number of names, obviously the format for our predictions. Two picks. One has to be outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race 2 Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. We will get the main selection first of all, then we'll get our secondary pick. Paul, who'd you like first up?
Tommy Fleetwood. Go every time for him, and I keep getting... Can you not go for somebody other than Tommy? No, I can't. I'm going for Tommy Fleetwood, thank you.
Tommy Fleetwood is the number one pick for Paul. Kit?
Matt Fitzpatrick, his form there is absolutely obscene. He's going for the three-peat. He's also finished tied seventh and second the previous couple of years before that. Obviously, his current form is great. Wonderful putter. Knows how to get the job done. Loves that place. All over Matt Fitzpatrick.
You haven't studied this at all, have
you?
No,
you haven't, no.
Just off the top of my head.
Sergio Garcia for me. Rubbish by Kit earlier. But I just think whenever he plays Cron, something happens. He obviously enjoys the environment. He can play. He's won there previously. Admittedly, it was a good few years ago. And I know he comes in to the event off the back of some disappointing performances on the PGA Tour. But when he comes and plays in Europe. I think he ups his game a little bit. He played well in the Andalusia Masters not so long ago. When he's played over this side of the pond, he always plays well. So he is my main pick. Come on, Sergio. Let's get those players that are outside of the top 50 from last year's Race to Dubai standings. Paul, first up, who's your
I'm going to go for another Englishman, Sam Horsfield. I know he lives in Orlando area now, but he had a 10th place last week. He hasn't played a great deal this summer, so I'm looking for a good autumn from Sam.
Kit.
Gavin Green for me. Guy who
I picked him
like,
a few weeks ago, led after day one, and then nearly missed the cut.
Feels like he's on the cusp. Feels like he's on the cusp of doing something big. Like you say, he's in good form. 3 top tens in his last 7 starts. 16th last week in Sweden, and a very solid tied 12th in his debut at Kranz last year. So it's whether he can string 4 rounds together. Normally he has 2 or 3 very good rounds. If he can put 4 in, he'll take stopping.
I'm hoping that Joost Luiten will maybe get inspired from the likes of Thomas Peters and Bernd Wiesberger. We've been talking about players that are, I think, better than just, you know, the rank and file European Tour, which is obviously a great standard anyway. Not quite right at the top, but obviously he's had injury issues. He to me, comes into that band of players, or should do.
Yeah.
Thoughts? Agreeing with me?
Excellent choice.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Top of the greens in regulation stats last week in Sweden, incidentally. That is your lot for now. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Next week, we'll be reviewing the Omega European Masters. We'll be looking ahead to the Porsche European Open as well. But from Paul Eales, Paul, where are you playing next? Are you playing this week?
Hanbury Manor in the Sinclair Invitation.
Chances this week because you've been playing
chances are fantastic.
Yeah, should you be
56.
On our shortlist? Kit, what are you up to? You're a pro-ing this week.
Over to Telfaris in Ireland, so the Guinness
fantastic.
Will be a-flowing.
Excellent. Many thanks for your company over the last hour. From me, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We'll speak soon. We'll